most of the Hong Kong people just don't trust of the current government.
A view of Hong Kong from the streets. It's Wednesday, July 3rd. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're glad to have you with us. Find us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, digitizing India's massive welfare programs. No plastic bags for New Zealand. The business of Facebook, the EU, and Vietnam. Thinking robots and hot iron in space. It's all on today's VOA Asia. China on Tuesday deplored violence in Hong Kong that saw protesters ransack the city's legislature, fueling expectations it will take a tougher line on the territory, even as details of the scenes of vandalism went largely unreported on the mainland. Massive protests in the former British colony that began early last month came to a head overnight on Monday, prompting predictions that the police would take a harder stance, the city would be forced into a tighter embrace with the mainland, and Hong Kong leader Carrie Lam would be forced out. Beijing called the violence an undisguised challenge to the one country, two systems model under which Hong Kong was granted a high degree of autonomy when it was returned to China in 1997. Millions of people have taken to Hong Kong streets in recent weeks to protest a now-suspended extradition bill that would allow people to be sent to mainland China to face trial in courts controlled by the Communist Party. VOA Asia spoke with one Hong Kong resident who says she has taken part in one of the massive marches that have made up the series of protests. Lillian Lee refers to herself as a simple Hong Kong citizen. Our Ira Melman asked Lee about the overall mood of the people in Hong Kong.
Very bad. We are sad, devastated, and we just don't know what the future will become. And we worry about worse is coming.
We know the main reason behind the protest, but is there anything else beside that extradition situation that is causing this?
I think deep down is the trust issue. Most of the Hong Kong people just don't trust of the current government who's doing the good thing just for the Hong Kong people, but to please the Chinese government.
And what would you like to see the Chinese government do?
It's hard to say because according to the history, we don't think the government will do something to please the citizen, but just to use some harsh or use something that to just construct their power, but not for the good of the citizens.
Now, what about the Hong Kong government? What would you expect from them, or what would you hope from them? I should say.
I hope they can truly listen to what the public is trying to tell them, sit down and talk to us sincerely, and try not to be so harsh. And the chief executive is saying that she's a mother of two sons. She understands the young people, but I don't think it's true, because otherwise it won't become the situation like last night.
Yeah, the situation like last night, that's what comes to mind. Is there a dichotomy among the protesters? Are they composed of, on one end, people, you know, saying we should break into a government building, and the other saying we should just peacefully protest? Is there a division there? Is a separation?
I think there are discussions between, as we see from the videos, and I'm not there, but there are a lot of sharings among the forums or the websites today. I think we inside there, they're discussing what to do next, because no one knows what's right or what was actually wrong. So it's just a conversation and a group action.
Is the communication taking place solely through social media?
Social media and just on-site inside a government building.
What about police reaction so far?
I think at the first protest the police is doing far, but in recent weeks they're trying not to be so harsh to the protesters. I think it is good, and they are trying not to harm the citizens.
Do you feel safe in the city?
Yes, I feel safe.
All right. And the city's big enough whereby you can separate yourself from what is happening if need be, correct?
Yeah, even though I'm near Admiralty last night after the march, I was there, but I was outside and I observed a while and I still feel I'm safe.
How deep is the concern for what is happening among people you know?
Very deep. We have a lot of discussions between different sectors, and NGO sector also discussing what we can do to make the situation not so worse.
Do you have concern that the Chinese government might step up action against Hong Kong?
I don't think they will do that, because it will only make the situation worse.
In what way?
If they do so, I'm sure there will be much stronger protests.
How far away is the city of Hong Kong from being, as you know it, normal?
I can't use normal to describe the situation now. It's really, I don't have a word.
What would you like to see from the rest of the world?
I think for non-Hong Kong people, I hope they can keep on aware of what's going on here, and then maybe just give us some support. And as long as there are many people looking at what's going on, I think the government won't do something stupid.
Hong Kong resident Lillian Lee speaking from Hong Kong via Skype with VOA Asia's Ira Melman. We'd like to thank our intern, Michelle Annalou, for facilitating the interview. These are among some of the top Asia stories that you'll find right now when you visit our website, voanews.com. Anger simmers after Hong Kong protesters storm Legislative Council. U.S. downplays Trump concession to sell chips to China's Huawei telecom firm. Dalai Lama deeply sorry for comments on women. Japan official to Kardashian West, kimono belongs to Japan. Thai journalists and activists said to face increased scrutiny. Expanded coverage of all these stories and so much more can be found on Facebook at VOA Asia, as well as the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. India spends billions of dollars on social welfare programs for the poor, but corruption, fraud, and inefficiencies often prevent the benefits from reaching them. But now the government is starting to transform the way it gets welfare to the poor by linking welfare programs to the world's biggest biometric identity project, under which more than 1 billion people have been given biometric cards. Anjana Pasricha reports on how residents of a rural hamlet in the northern Himalayan state of Himachal Pradesh are benefiting after it switched from cash to digital payments.
Toiling in Tanda village, Biru Devi is relaxed about getting paid for her labor. Along with other women, she works under a government employment program that guarantees poor rural families 100 days of work a year.
Earlier, my money was never paid in time. Maybe the bills did not get passed. But now my wages go into my bank account and are not delayed.
The payments got streamlined after a public sector bank and village authorities led a program to make Tanda a digital village. All residents were persuaded to open bank accounts that were linked to biometric identity cards called Aadhaar, so that even the illiterate could operate them. The switchover from cash to digital payments eliminated middlemen who used to siphon off money from the anti-poverty program.
They are happy that they have to just show their Aadhaar card and they have to just put their finger or thumb and they get their money or deposit their money or get the money transferred. So it's changing. There will be no corruption, there will be no commission, they will be benefited directly and faster.
In the local village shop, subsidized food rations that India provides poor families is given after the identity of eligible residents is verified through electronic cards and fingerprints. This has eliminated the practice of diverting the food to others. Residents in Tanda are also learning how being linked to a banking economy can benefit them in other ways.
They have savings, they are taking education loans, teaching their children. Access to loans due to banking has also boosted our agriculture and traditional dairy farming and improved incomes. So even those who cannot get jobs earn a decent living.
And with their smartphones, villagers now shop for vegetables and groceries at the local store the modern way.
Our children also tell us, Mom, the old times are over. Become a model for the new world. We also feel happy that we too are part of a new age. Now I have some savings. If there's any emergency, I can take out money.
Leapfrogging into the digital era has transformed this Himalayan village in more ways than one. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, Himachal Pradesh.
Happening now in Asia, Japan's trade minister says the kimono belongs to Japan, not to Kim Kardashian West's shapewear brand. West announced the line Kimono Solution Wear last week, but some Japanese critics on social media said the name is inappropriate and a take on centuries-old kimono clothing. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad you're joining us today on VOA Asia. A tough new ban on single-use plastic bags has come into force in New Zealand. Retailers caught still handling them out to customers could be fined up to $67,000 U.S. But Phil Mercer in Sydney tells us critics say the legislation introduced this week does not go far enough.
It's a small country, but about 750 million plastic bags are used in New Zealand each year. Surveys show most people support the ban on lightweight single-use bags that the government says are an environmental menace. Retailers who flout the law could face heavy fines, and shoppers are encouraged to report offenders, while random checks by officials are also planned. But authorities say their initial approach will be to educate companies about their responsibilities before fines are imposed. Eugenie Sage, the Associate Minister for the Environment, says the ban is part of a broader assault on New Zealand's throwaway culture.
It is progressively making that shift. I mean, my grandmother never used plastic bags going to the supermarket. That was what that generation did. And I think we're making the shift back to less plastic.
The ban was announced by Jacinda Ardern, New Zealand's Prime Minister, last year. And regulations that came into force Monday apply to any type of plastic less than 70 microns in thickness. Supermarkets had already begun phasing them out. Garbage bin liners, nappy bags and pet waste bags are exempt. Critics, however, insist a loophole will allow retailers to continue to sell reusable, heavier grade, but more environmentally harmful plastic shopping bags. More than 50 countries, including Bangladesh, China and France, have brought in laws to ban or restrict the use of lightweight plastic bags. Canada says it will ban harmful single-use plastics as early as 2021. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Coming up, Vietnam makes a deal. You're listening to VOA Asia.
VOA Special English. A way to learn American English and much more. Broadcasting a half hour of world news and features every day on radio. You can also find Special English on television and online at voaspecialenglish.com. For 50 years, helping people understand world events and the language and culture of America.
America. This news from VOA Asia. Scientists in Australia say they have used artificial intelligence to develop a powerful new vaccine against the flu. The team from Flinders University believe it is the first time a computer has used its own machine learning to design a new drug for use in people. You can visit VOA Asia Facebook to see more on this and other great stories. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, Facebook regulation and a new deal between the EU and Vietnam are the topics on today's VOA Asia Business Scene with Skylar Ogden.
Calls continue for government officials to regulate Facebook and to possibly break up the company. Some of the issues of concern include privacy breaches, foreign attempts at influencing elections, and the proliferation of harmful, hateful content on the web. Facebook's head of global affairs, Nick Clegg, has defended the company.
Where do we draw the line between freedom of expression and harmful content? Facebook has had to accept its mistakes and act more responsibly. We have hired an army of more than 30,000 people and invested in our systems to counter the spread of fake news and misinformation, to reduce harmful content, and to ensure greater transparency for our users over how their data is used.
Reuters has reported that the U.S. Federal Trade Commission and the Justice Department is setting the groundwork for possible antitrust investigations into Facebook. Other companies that might also be investigated include Amazon, Alphabet, and Apple. Facebook raised even more concerns last week when it said it plans to launch a new global cryptocurrency. The digital currency, called Libra, is similar to Bitcoin and is likely to boost the company's e-commerce services and its ad revenue. Clegg warned regulators that decisions needed to be made quickly, or countries like China and Russia would be determining the internet's future.
If we in Europe and America don't turn off the white noise and begin to work together, we will sleepwalk into a new era where the internet is no longer a universal space, but a series of silos where different countries set their own rules and authoritarian regimes soak up their citizens' data while restricting their freedom.
The White House plans to bring digital leaders together for a social media summit on July 11th, but it's still unclear who exactly will be attending. The European Union signed a landmark free trade deal with Vietnam, which is the first of its kind with any developing country in Asia. The agreement will pave the way for tariff reduction on 99% of goods between the EU and Vietnam. Cecilia Malmström is the EU Trade Commissioner.
Because the EU is the biggest investor globally. But here in Vietnam, it has so far been relatively modest. It stood at just over 8 billion euros in 2016. But with the new investment protection agreement, this will increase. It will replace old-style bilateral agreements, ensuring a high level of investment protection through a clear definition of standards.
The EU is Vietnam's second largest export market after the United States, with garment and footwear products being its main exports. In 2018, Vietnam exported $42.5 billion worth of goods and services to the EU, while the value of imports from the region reached $13.8 billion. The EU-Vietnam Free Trade Agreement still needs to be approved by the European Parliament. Cecilia Malmström.
Once in force, this will provide fantastic opportunities, providing jobs and growth on both sides. On the EU side, we hope for a swift ratification by the European Parliament, and for Vietnam, we hope for the same thing in the National Assembly. The sooner we see the agreements through, the sooner business, workers, and consumers can benefit.
The European Union also has trade agreements with South Korea, Japan, and Singapore, and has launched negotiations with Indonesia, Malaysia, the Philippines, and Thailand. For VOA's Business Scene, I'm Skylar Ogden.
This news from VOA Asia, the Dalai Lama says he's deeply sorry about comments he made about women in a recent BBC interview. In the interview, the Tibetan spiritual leader said if female Dalai Lama comes, then she should be more attractive. The comment caused a stir on social media around the world. You'll find all the big stories throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, professors at the University of Maryland are looking to dramatically improve basic artificial intelligence as they attempt to teach robots how to think and use their past experience to perform new tasks. Natasha Yeoman visited the university to find out more.
Teaching robots to do the simplest things is both difficult and time-consuming. This video, for example, shows an android attempting to fold a t-shirt relying on a special written code. As it does, it needs to take into account the size, texture, and algorithm. For artificial intelligence, it's a complex operation. But a computer science team at the University of Maryland at College Park is working to help robots perform better by using experience from their past actions.
Today, many of the robots in many applications are quite slow, because they do not have the ability to predict one signal on the basis of another. Now, with creating perceptual memories, the robots can use prior experience in order to do things very fast.
Combining robotic perception and motor commands is an ambitious task, one that Olomonas and his team are tackling with the so-called hyperdimensional computer theory. They say it will help different kinds of artificial intelligence perform better. For instance, they say smartphones will be able to analyze the situation and accumulate experience.
There are many applications of neural networks when it comes to mobile devices. For example, you're trying to figure out your location. You can take a picture of your surroundings and the device will tell you where you are.
Drones will be able to analyze their own surroundings and won't need to be directed by a human pilot. The University of Maryland scientists admit they've taken on an ambitious project and that there's still a lot of work ahead, but Alamonas hopes to have a big impact by creating one system that all AI developers can use.
Somehow, the whole operation of trying to develop an intelligent system resembles the biblical Babel Tower, where you have all these people that speak different languages. Now, the new framework that we introduce allows us to have one language, the language of the hyperdimensional vectors, to express all the information that is there in perception, decision, cognition, and motion.
Another dramatic change, robots' eyes. Scientists say they're not just plain cameras anymore, but dynamic vision sensors that respond to movement and light. The mechanisms behind it work similarly to those of human eye, sending non-stop signals to the robotic brain that get recorded and stored, forming the equivalent of live experience. And that, scientists say, brings robot a lot closer to humans. Nastasia Yeoman for VOA News, College Park, Maryland.
VOA's Rick Pantaleo takes a moment to tell us about liquid iron.
This is Science in a Minute.
A pair of planetary scientists at the University of California, Santa Cruz, completed an analysis of metallic or M-type asteroids. Their findings led them to propose that some of the solar system's metallic asteroids may have had volcanoes that erupted with liquid iron after its crust had cooled and solidified shortly after their creation. The scientists say that these metallic asteroids were formed quite early in the solar system's history during the early stages of planet formation. It's thought that any serious collision between these developing planets would peel away their rocky outer layers, leaving behind its liquid iron core floating in space. The scientists say they were prompted to conduct their study in part by NASA's proposed 2022 launch of a probe that will investigate Psyche, the solar system's largest metallic asteroid. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Some of you have been listening to it on CCU Radio at National Chung Cheng University in Taipei, Taiwan. We thank everyone there who's tuned into our program today. And we also send our thanks out to our director, Tracy Carter, engineer Cedric Franklin, managing editor Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a super day.